Hi,
this is Florida Humanities Executive Director Nasheed Madyun. I'm happy to be sharing this episode from our podcast series, Form Beyond the Pages, here on Radio St. Pete. This program takes a behind-the-scenes look at our award-winning magazine, Form, through interviews with the acclaimed Florida writers who bring some of the most interesting stories on Florida's history to life. For more information on Florida Humanities or Forum Magazine, visit our website at floridahumanities.org.
People are fascinated with alligators, so of course there are lots of alligator-related tourist attractions. Right. And the big one, the big name, is Gatorland. You know, it's right there in the name. So, you know, there's that push and pull of sort of the Florida spirit of, oh my God, I'm so afraid of this, I want to go see a tourist attraction about it. That just sort of encapsulates the Florida spirit to me.
Welcome to Form Beyond the Pages, the podcast that tells the stories behind the stories of Florida Humanities award-winning magazine. I'm Andrew Quintana. In our inaugural season of this new podcast, we'll be speaking to the writers who penned the articles in our fall 2023 environmental issue of Form, This Land We Love. This week, writer Craig Pittman speaks with me about his article, Gatorland. Floridians are both fascinated and terrified by the prehistoric reptiles that live in our own backyards, which oftentimes they literally do. What was once seen as a fearsome creature that needed to be hunted to near extinction has evolved into a symbol of the Sunshine State. In his story, Pittman examines the history and behavior of the species that has become synonymous with Florida all over the world. Craig Pittman is a columnist for the Florida Phoenix and co-hosts the popular podcast Welcome to Florida. He's the author of 6 books, including The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. I think people who are familiar with your work wouldn't be surprised to see you writing an environmental story for an environmental issue. I mean, you were a reporter, an environmental reporter for the Tampa Bay Times for many years. You've written books about it. But what I noticed about your stories is that they're not so much about just the specific subject that you're writing about in that story. It's not just about the wildlife or the landscape that you're writing about. It's usually kind of our relationship with it, how tumultuous or how nice it is. What kind of drew you to that subject matter?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a big fan of detective stories. So I started off with Encyclopedia Brown, like all good Florida kids, and moved into Sherlock Holmes and then, you know, Philip Marlowe and Sam Spade and that kind of stuff. And then when I was 14, my great aunt took a big draw on her Pall Mall and said, "I think you're ready for Travis McGee now." And she's the one who introduced me to John D. McDonald, Sarasota writer who wrote a whole bunch of mysteries, many of which had environmental themes to them. And a lot of them were about the relationship of man to the environment, and especially how a lot of fast book artists were doing their best to ruin Florida. So that sort of showed me my state in a new light at an early age, and it really made a deep impression on me.
So you kind of almost had a activist view of things.
I don't know if I'd call it activist so much as realist. McDonald depicted Florida as a sunny place for shady people. So that sort of set the tone for a lot of things. I mean, you know, at that point I was a Boy Scout. We went camping, we went canoeing, you know, we went to state parks, and so I had some experience with this stuff, but he showed me that there were people out there who were trying to ruin those places that I valued. And obviously, that's a good story.
You start the story with a Florida man incident that happened in 2015. And you even have a line saying that most Florida man stories have a alligator connection of some sort. Can you explain to me what the incident you wrote about in that story was? Sure. And maybe also try to explain why you think there's always a Florida man connection?
Well, the specific story I used, and I should say that the minute the editor assigned me this story, this leaped to mind as I have to start the story with this story. I have to start it with the story of the guy in Loxahatchee who drove up to a Wendy's and tossed an alligator through the drive-through window because he thought it was a funny prank, and then was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, where the deadly weapon was the alligator. You know, it's one of many, many Florida man stories that involve alligators. Florida, I should mention Florida women too, because later in my story, there's a particular Florida woman story that made the rounds about a woman who was fighting the State Wildlife Commission over their attempts to confiscate her pet alligator, which she regularly dressed up and let it ride around on an ATV. So, and she said, people think they're vicious, but I let it kiss me on the mouth. So, you know, that really sort of encapsulates one side of people's relationship with alligators. But on the other side, you know, there's the details about alligator attacks, alligators climbing trees, climbing fences, showing up on people's doorsteps at 4 a.m. like some drunk uncle. You know, there are a lot of alligators in Florida, and so we're bound to have lots of run-ins with them.
Why do you think it's synonymous with Florida Man? Do you think it's just kind of their proximity to us, or do you think that it's in the spirit of Florida?
Yeah. Both. And I mean, some people in Florida have emotional support alligators. I mean, it's just, they're just part of the landscape. And a lot of it too is that there are just so many alligators. I mentioned in the story that a good rule of thumb is if you see something, a body of water that's larger than a mud puddle, chances are it's got at least one alligator in it.
As I mentioned, you like to write about our messy relationship with wildlife, and yeah, it's no different with the alligator.
There's just a lot more of it.
Right. No, exactly. Exactly. But I think it's also kind of fitting that you kind of do a good job presenting that love-hate relationship with, you know, Florida's an act of commercializing everything. Can you talk about that kind of commercialization?
Well, you know, people are fascinated with alligators, so of course there are lots of alligator-related tourist attractions. Right. And the big one, the big name, is Gatorland. You know, it's right there in the name. Plus, you enter through an alligator's mouth in order to get inside. And it's been around the longest of all of them. So, you know, there's that push and pull of sort of the Florida spirit of, oh my God, I'm so afraid of this, I want to go see a tourist attraction about it. You know, so that's just sort of encapsulates the Florida spirit to me.
What was the story behind Gatorland? I mean, when you wrote about our early Florida civilization and early explorers of Florida, you talk about kind of this fascination with the gator, not only with early Floridians, but with Spaniards who were here before, you know, Americans and everything.
They actually named it. They called it El Lagarto, the lizard, and that's where the name alligator comes from.
Right. And so when you were doing this research, I mean, did you find kind of a moment in Florida history where it felt like alligators went from being this predator to being this mascot?
Mascot? I mean, I think that goes with UF's founding and you know, UF adopting the gator as a mascot. But as far as becoming a symbol of Florida, I think that was during that era of the 19th century when so many people coming to Florida, basically every time they saw an alligator, they blasted it. And they did so because, number one, they had this very twisted sense of sport, but number two, because the hides were so valuable that they were, you know, they were killing these alligators and collecting the money for the hides, which were then sold to fashion houses in France and Italy, and then sold back to Americans. But and this is the period when hundreds of thousands of gators were killed every year. And as a result, they wound up on the endangered species list.
Yeah, that's something I think I was taken aback by, because I think my time in Florida, alligators have
been
everywhere.
They're ubiquitous, yeah.
Right, exactly. You don't think about ever seeing a shortage of of alligators in Florida. So to hear that there was a time when they were just being hunted left and right, where their population was being decimated.
And their habitat was being wiped out, too. I mean, basically, all the big wetlands where they hung out were being filled in, paved over, you know, and development was running amok in Florida, sort of like it is today. But, you know, there were no restrictions on it. So places alligators would normally be found were rapidly disappearing. Mm-hmm.
I wonder, in the spirit of then of, you know, this mass expansion of Florida, like you mentioned, the development, the hunting and everything, this need to still kind of hold on to this reptile almost as a sideshow. I mean, you mentioned the circuses. I mean, I think you mentioned the story. Alligators are not just a Florida species. They're kind of throughout the South. I wonder what, when you were writing this, when you were looking at this, why did Florida kind of just gravitate towards this reptile?
Well, you know, because our tourism industry is so huge. Harriet Beecher Stowe virtually invented the Florida tourism industry in the late 1800s and invited people to come down to the state that she had adopted after the Civil War that she started. And so people were coming down here and they were, you know, some of them were worried about alligators. And so, but alligators became this sort of symbol of natural Florida that it had to be vanquished. It had to be overcome. It had to be dominated. And the way you did that was you killed the alligators. So, you know, that's sort of where that came from. But at the same time, as a tourist attraction, there were places like Gatorland that started up in the post-World War II era that actually paid Seminole Indians to live there in a phony Indian village and wrestle the alligators. And so alligator wrestling, showing that man could be dominant over this frightening creature, became a part of the tourist attraction.
I wanted to ask you about that. You briefly mentioned it, but I think that was something I was curious about, and maybe if you found more that you just didn't make it into the final copy, but the connection that alligators have with indigenous people of Florida. Yes. It's again briefly mentioned as a transition almost into the next mm-hmm. phase of the story, but how much of that relationship is really there in our histories?
There was a time when the Seminole Indian tribe was very, very poor. They were considered one of the poorest tribes of all. And so in order to make money, some of them were hired to wrestle alligators, or they would advertise gator wrestling as an attraction in order to make some money. And so that became a way to draw in the tourists and make a little bit of money. I should point out that the Seminole Indian tribe is not poor now. The Seminole Indian tribe is very, very rich as a result of Native American gambling, which they pioneered. And in fact, the tribe is now making enough money that a few years ago they actually had to advertise for non-Native people to step in and fill the role of gator wrestlers.
I think what I find inspirational about this story when it comes to the subject of the alligator is that despite all our development, despite, you know, years of hunting, years of wetland destruction, alligators have not changed. Alligators are still here. I mean, you even say they are a species that hasn't changed in almost 8 million years, this adaptation of these alligators. I mean, it's very Florida, don't you think?
Think about it. The places where they live have not really changed that much. The conditions under which they live have not changed that much. Just that some of those places are now golf course water hazards, not natural lakes. So, but that's still the same sort of habitat. So a change in the habitat, if they had to adapt to it, that would require an evolutionary change. There hasn't been any need for an evolutionary change on their part.
What do you think our future relationship with alligators looks like? I mean, do we just keep getting used to them showing up in canals and ponds left and right?
I think it depends on the medical research that I mentioned at the end of the story, where we're discovering that their blood contains substances that could help us fight off various infections. And once again, it's part of their adaptation to their natural habitat. It keeps them from getting the kind of infections that would be detrimental to them. We could use that same sort of thing. And so there's been a lot of research that's going on right now to try and figure out how to take what the alligators have and translate it into what we could have without us turning into alligators, of course. Hard to tuck your tail in, though, when you're driving the car.
That was Craig Pittman on his story, Gatorland. Forum Beyond the Pages is produced by Florida Humanities. Our music was created by Tampa Bay area musician JJ Padishaw. You can follow him on Instagram at JJ Padishaw Music. Want to get the latest issue of Forum delivered to your door 3 times a year? Become a Florida Humanities member by visiting floridahumanities.org/membership. Until next time.